But if you can then hot swap real assets that people care about that have underlying fundamentals from the real world, all of a sudden you've brought on-chain real assets that have long-term terminal value that people care about to use these open source, transparent, more accessible financial primitives that we built and sort of begun to battle test over the years on-chain.
Get ready to jumpstart your week with the FCAT Crypto Brief, brought to you by Fidelity Center for Applied Technology. Every week, we roll up our sleeves and delve into the hottest topics, from blockchain breakthroughs to DeFi revolutions and market happenings. We promise to go deeper than the headlines and deliver insights you can't get just anywhere. Be sure to hit the subscribe button for your weekly dose of crypto commentary. Quick disclaimer, we're here for education, not investment advice. Views expressed are that of the hosts, not Fidelity or its affiliates. Crypto's a wild space, highly volatile, can become illiquid at any time, and is strictly for those with a high risk tolerance. Buckle up, enjoy the ride, and let's dive into what's been happening recently.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the FCAT Crypto Brief podcast. We've got a great show in the docket for everyone today. This week, we have Max Waddington, Jack Newrider, and myself, Matt Allen, on the pod. We have a big week of news with some interesting themes emerging. I think really the biggest theme that we can talk about is the further integration of traditional finance and crypto markets. So we have Coinbase launching verified pools, Athena and Securitize launching a new blockchain for DeFi, and Kraken's acquisition of NinjaTrader. With that, I think we can just get right into it. Max, you want to tee up the Coinbase verified pool story?
Yeah, definitely can. I mean, before we get into it, I think it's kind of incredible that we had like one big theme this week. A lot of times on the pod, we're kind of all over the place with like mixing and matching different stories. But it seemed kind of pretty clear what direction this week was going, at least. We'll see how it goes next week. But to go along with that theme, I think it was the 18th of March that Coinbase announced and I think officially launched their verified pools. So essentially, what they are is basically a set of liquidity pools on Base, right? That is using Uniswap V4 and some hooks. In an interesting way, so these liquidity pools are set up in a way to only allow those who are like verified by Coinbase to interact with them, right? So essentially how this works is, as a user, you would log into Coinbase, essentially KYC with Coinbase, and during that procedure, you would attach your Coinbase wallet address. And once they've completed their verification on their side, they would essentially label your Coinbase wallet as verified. So then when you go to interact with these Uniswap pools on Base, the features of the pool actually have certain checks in place to verify that, to confirm that you have been KYC'd through Coinbase and that you're not on the OFAC sanction list and a few other checks alongside that. So I think the construction or the implementation is really interesting, right? The KYC and that procedure is happening once through Coinbase, while the Uniswap like protocol and these pools are actually like doing those on-chain checks to verify their participants. And I guess before we open it up to questions there, like a really important point is that you still don't know, to my knowledge, you still don't know who the other participants in the pool are, right? All you know is that they've been verified by Coinbase. So it does strike a bit of a balance between still keeping some anonymity with the other participants that you're in the trades with, right? But still meeting that like compliance need that some institutions or users might have. What do you guys think?
I think we're continuing to see Coinbase push Base as more or less like where they see their future business going and trying to push it on chain. And if you're able to KYC users with their wallets on your own chain, then what activities could they not do that they can do off chain? Essentially, once you start to bring all those functions, the trading, the ability to earn interest on you know, on a dollar-like asset like USDC directly in your wallet, like all these functions are being added to the ability to do them directly on-chain on Base. It seems like that's the future that, that Coinbase is betting on anyways.
Yeah, honestly, I couldn't agree more. I think it is a pretty big hurdle in terms of like maybe not this initial first step, but you could see in some future world if stocks and other securities are being traded on chain that require some sort of KYC, you can see how this is maybe a stepping stone towards that and how some sort of verification like this would be required, right? And like you said, it is definitely interesting that they're kind of taking the approach of bringing the traditional finance pieces on chain as opposed to maybe some other you know, projects that we'll talk about that are maybe leaning more towards bringing DeFi closer to TradFi, right? So it's an interesting spectrum there. But yeah, I couldn't agree more that, that's kind of how I see the direction Coinbase is at least going.
Yeah, and it seems like that piece is pretty critical of like bringing traditional assets on chain. It has obviously been like a huge topic. The problem has been once you bring things that are explicitly securities, like an equity on chain, you know, then you run into the issue of like, you have to KYC users. You have like, there are clear rules of the road that have to be followed with respect to, you know, traditional securities and securities laws. And we haven't seen like the right combination of applications, permissioning of applications, digital identity and KYC kind of all molded together where you have people that actually want to use it. And it's not just, again, like we use the phrase a walled garden a lot. And that seems to be what like Coinbase is obviously trying to do here, where they have users that are using Base and then like freely and more in a more permissionless, less identified fashion. And then, you know, you also are building this separate world that lives alongside it that, you know, you can KYC yourself to enter. And then, you know, we're obviously speculating, but it seems like the next step is like to put potentially actual financial securities like equities on chain and allow people to, you know, trade and use them and use applications like borrowing and lending protocols with those assets. That, I mean, I think that's what everybody here is hoping happens long term is we have a bunch of speculative assets and core financial primitives that DeFi has built. And like, I think they've proven out that they work pretty well. Like applications like Aave and Uniswap that have been around for a while, been through cycles, been through market volatility, they work. But the kind of sustainability problem that you run into is like most of the assets that are traded on them, if you look at the actual underlying fundamentals and then where they trade, if we revert to the actual fundamentals of those assets, they're probably not worth what they're worth. And like, what are we really doing? We're just trading and borrowing and lending against a bunch of assets that maybe don't have that much true long-term terminal value. But if you can then hot swap like real assets that people care about that have underlying fundamentals from the real world, all of a sudden you brought on-chain, you know, real assets that have long-term terminal value that people care about to use these open source, transparent, more accessible financial primitives that we built and sort of begun to battle test over the years on chain.
Yeah, Jack, I mean, I couldn't agree with that more, right? It's like, I think if you talk to people who are naysayers about crypto, I've definitely heard anecdotally things like, well, what are you building? Like, it seems all that's being built in crypto are ways to trade back and forth these tokens that I don't even want, so why would I involve myself? But I think the hope for something like this is that what's being built are the rails and the back end and everything that's required to offer things like 24/7 liquidity, really frictionless transfers. We started talking about decentralized exchanges and swaps and everything. Like you both said, like these are things that work today and are exciting and users want to use them. And so kind of balancing how do we then work with the requirements of institutions to offer real world securities. It's a really interesting problem to solve. And I think that this is an interesting way to go about it. So we'll definitely have to keep watching and see what happens. You know, a question I have for both of you is now we start talking about KYCing with Coinbase to access their verified pools. If I want to go and then if I'm trading, you know, some security in Coinbase's verified pool and I want to swap it for something that's trading on Kraken, like, can we see a world where those KYCs are transferable? Like, I don't know. That would be, it's a really interesting question. I don't think any of us have the answer.
Jack, I think you can explain it better than any of us here in terms of like what the real like kind of hurdle is that might prevent that in the future. Yeah, I mean, I'd love to hear your thoughts there.
No, I was just thinking about like even using like applications and blockchains permissionlessly is a pain. We talk about it a lot. It's like not a great user experience, even for people that are crypto native that like kind of know what they're doing. And you still have run into instances where you're like, oh, I'm bridging this asset from this L2. I got to move it back to the base, the underlying chain, or I want to bridge it directly. Like, what's the best route to go about this? Then there's, a certain wait period. I move the assets and then they don't instantly show up in my wallet. So I have like a mini heart attack until like they eventually usually do. It works most of the time, from my experience, but like it's definitely not a great experience. And I think we talk about that a lot. But then you layer on this additional piece, which is like, okay, well, if I have to KYC or verify myself to use these applications to then access assets that, I think are more sustainable long term, like traditional assets on these chains, digital identity and like having the ability to port assets from one chain to another seamlessly while also carrying like your identity from one chain to another. It just feels like another layer of complexity that if I have to KYC, verify myself, port my assets to an L2, then when I want to go use an application that lives somewhere else because maybe it's, on a chain that's more optimized for that specific function, I then have to bridge my assets over there, re-KYC myself and re-verify myself, maybe in a different wallet. It's like, there's so many, it's another added step. So, I mean, it gets back to like, there's still work to be done on simplification and like, I think we chatted earlier, like the word intense comes up a lot in terms of for L2s to make like bridging across L2s and using applications that live on multiple chains far more seamless. That's a conversation for another day. But I think identity adds another layer to this where we need to solve like digital identity or the ability to KYC yourself with one provider and have that proved in some fashion for other providers to be able to then interact with you and not have to re-KYC you.
Yeah, I mean, I would reiterate that point. Like, we see all this work done on the interoperability side. We can maybe see the light of at the end of the tunnel in terms of like a world where it's much more seamless to transact across these L2s. Like, I can see that. I'm not seeing a world where we have that like singular KYC identification procedure, right? That all the institutions are recognizing. Oh, and that could just be because we're so early here, right? Like, this is a pretty new initiative that Coinbase is taking on. So I'm curious to see if eventually we'll see that light at the end of the tunnel with, making that KYC procedure pretty easily.
And it's not a space that I have, like, a ton of expertise in, but I have seen, like, a lot of companies rely on similar third-party providers. Like, there's a couple of big ones. And whether or not, one of those is able to sort of crack that problem of like, hey, we work with a bunch of these different exchanges or L2s or whatever it be, applications, and can we just make that all integrated that all of those providers are using us? And therefore, you can trust that if you're using us as the same third party that we've verified them for Coinbase, we've also verified them for Kraken, and it counts for both. I don't think that exists yet, as far as I'm aware, but it seems like inevitably where we end up at some point if this continues to grow.
Yeah, I mean, the opportunity is there. So I'm sure we'll see people attempt to do something like this to provide that service. And I know this is like we're talking about like kind of the longer term vision. What I'm most excited about is to see if this initial step will bring institutions kind of dipping their toe in the water here, right? Like, you can definitely see like a situation where it might remove some hurdles or make the compliance end of the procedure a bit more, a bit less cumbersome. And maybe some, institutions have a bit more comfort dipping their toe in the water at least. So that's what I'll be looking for with these verified pools to see if there's, any real action in the shorter term, before those solutions are really built out that we discussed earlier.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think those solutions are a bit of a ways off and we don't have an answer on those quite yet. But to your point, right, like, I think to get users online with something like this, there has to be a reason to KYC yourself into these pools. Otherwise, like, why? Like, one, why am I going to go through that process? Two, like, maybe it doesn't align with my ethos of like cypherpunk, like private anonymity. So I think you need like some product on the back end offered by institutions that really provides the incentive for users to go through this process. But I think we'll have to just wait and see how things develop. But on a similar note, I think we have another story with a different kind of solution to a similar problem with Athena and Securitize announcing a new blockchain. Jack, do you want to give a quick overview on that one?
Yeah, for sure. So like you mentioned, Athena and Securitize announced the middle of this past week that they're going to be launching a new high-performant EVM-compatible network that they're calling Converge, that they're planning to launch at some point in the coming months or year. The documentation isn't even out yet. Supposedly that's coming in the coming weeks. But they announced on X. Athena, we've talked about quite a few times. They're mainly the issuer of a tokenized yields-bearing asset called USDE, or it can be staked for SUSDE to earn its yield, which has a supply of over $5 billion. And then Securitize is a market leader in tokenized products. They issue BIDL, which is like an on-chain money market fund-like asset. They've issued over $2 billion of on-chain securities, one of the largest tokenization players. And the idea here, you know, would be to provide, you know, platform for potentially traditional financial assets to converge, hence the name Converge, with on-chain protocols. And obviously this sounds, you know, similar to the Coinbase story here. It's just a different implementation. So we're seeing like different attempts at the same idea, which is converging traditional assets with on-chain protocols and primitives, and also some of the valuable on-chain assets. They announced that Aave, Pendle, Morpho, and a handful of other pretty notable largest Ethereum-based applications have committed to launching apps on this EVM chain, which of course, because it's an EVM chain, that means that, you know, there isn't a ton of legwork to be able to sort of port those applications over. And that there'll be both permissionless applications and permissioned applications. So in some sense, like for some of these, they'll launch both. They'll launch a permissionless version and a permissioned version. And then the idea from like Athena's perspective would be to have assets like USDE, which is a stablecoin-like asset, to be used as a gas asset. Other assets like USDTB, which US dollar treasury bill, I think is like kind of why it's called that. It's effectively like an Athena formed form of like wrapped BIDL, not to confuse people, but it's basically Securitize's product underneath it, but Athena has like sort of wrapped it in some form. So like digital dollar like assets that will live and be like sort of the base asset moving around this blockchain will be like dollar like assets. And then secure the chain with a set of permissioned validators and staked Athena, the ENA governance token, will be used. So collaboration between one of the largest tokenized asset issuers and one of the largest, you know, traditional tokenization platforms. And similar vision, I think, is that you'd have permissionless applications alongside permissioned applications. You bring users in, and then hopefully over time, they'll provide their identity, they'll KYC to be able to get access to assets that Securitize is presumably going to package and tokenize from, you know, traditional issuers like BlackRock, Apollo, et cetera, that they've worked with in the past. And then those assets will be able to be brought into these permissioned applications that users use already.
That was a lot. I think that might be the name or the word of the year here, at least how this pod is shaping up so far this year. So I love that. I think it's interesting too, in terms of the general direction we're seeing a lot of the applications and products like take throughout their life cycle. Like initially, a lot of apps or some of these products, they'll start on Ethereum and like as a, kind of a first step, and then see what they can do kind of on their own, right? So I think it's likely we'll see that to continue. It'll just be really interesting to me to be able to measure kind of the success based on the environment, right? We have different products or same products, different environment, and we can see how that kind of plays out over the long term. That's personally just what I'm most interested in.
Yeah, it all plays into a theme that we talked about a few weeks ago, which is like nobody really knows what all this infrastructure will mature into and what will survive and what won't. But there's different implementations, right? Literally in this conversation, we just talked about effectively like two of the categories, and we sort of broke it down into three buckets where you have like Ethereum and rollups, and Base is a rollup, an L2 that exists on top of Ethereum. And theoretically, Ethereum derives value from people using Base in some form. Although we could argue how much value they actually derive if you continue to increase blob space capacity. But that's, again, another conversation for another day. Then you have, in this instance, like an EVM compatible chain. So it's connected to Ethereum applications and the Ethereum ecosystem, and you can port assets between Ethereum and this new chain that will exist at some point. But Ethereum doesn't derive direct value from it. And then you also have the third bucket is sort of like non-EVM, non-Ethereum ecosystems like Solana and Move ecosystems and others. But it's just, there's so many different implementations of the same thing. People are building sort of the same thing at the same time, but with different trade-offs or at the margins effectively. And it's still unclear what exactly will win.
Yeah, I think that's super interesting. I mean, from a user perspective, we've touched on so many different trade-offs here, right? Like the first being the difference between like using Coinbase verified pools or a separate L1, like this Ethereum securitized blockchain. And then you also have like, are you using an EVM compatible blockchain? Are you using a rollup on Ethereum? Are you using Ethereum? Are you using something else? And from a user's perspective, it's super hard to say, like, which one do I want?
And hopefully, we live in a world where wallets can abstract all of this away and the users don't even know. But I don't think everything that's being built now will survive by any means, right? I mean, maybe it's multiple things from each of those categories, but like, still, I would assume from my estimation, right, like 90% of all of this will die, and then 10% of it will survive, or whatever, the Pareto principle, right? Like 20% of these will drive 80% of the actual value and usage. And then there'll be like a long tail of stuff that doesn't get used that much. But again, we're still in like the early stages, and people want points from these, people want airdrops, right? That stuff will continue to persist despite the fact that it's truly not sustainable on a long enough time horizon.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. And then just to get back to like the user experience, how would you describe the difference in user experience between using something like a Coinbase verified pool and using this Athena securitized blockchain? Is it too early to say?
It's a good question. I mean, I think for the Athena side, it's definitely too early to say, right? You mentioned, Jack, I think they're not, like, I don't even think they are testing yet. What was, I mean, interesting and pretty compelling to me on the Coinbase side was that you go through this KYC process one time, and then the pools are doing the checks for you, right? So it doesn't really seem like it would add many steps on like the transaction side of things for me as a user, right? Like once I do that KYC process, the rest of my transactions, whether it's through verified pools or permissionless pools, look pretty similar, right? Just in the back end of the smart contracts on these pools, they're having these additional checks just to make sure that I'm allowed to do so. So like that seems pretty compelling to me, like as a user, just keeping things nice and simple. I would assume that would be like the competitive like standard, right? Like you would want to make it just as easy and put off all the verification stuff so that users don't have to deal with that on a transaction by transaction basis. Like that would be, I guess, my guess for like as to where they would try to get their UX to be, competitive.
To Max's point, it's like, it's still unclear. A lot of this stuff still doesn't even exist or hasn't been built yet. But like having used like L2s as well as obviously Base ETH, but like also EVM compatible L1s, like the experience isn't that different for a user once you port your assets to that chain or rollup. And like the fees aren't that different. Once we're talking about like sub 1 cent fees across the board and like transaction times that are, you know, in most cases under 30 seconds, a lot of times like milliseconds, and it happens almost instantly. Like it takes longer for like the RPC call and like for the wallet to know that it happened than the actual transaction to happen. But like it's pretty much the same. It's just like what applications exist within that ecosystem that you want to actually use is sort of the main difference. There's a bunch of like security assumptions underneath the hood. It's just like most people don't even recognize what those are.
Yeah, like assuming all the security is the same, which it's not.
Which it's not. Which only matters until it matters, right?
Yes, correct. But assuming that, like, are these products and services meaningful enough to me to then go through a separate KYC procedure and go through that process again. It doesn't sound initially like a huge hurdle, but I know it goes into the math behind what users decide to do and not.
That's almost like, it's like a branding. Like when these all have like the same applications or like almost the same applications, like borrowing and lending, sure, there's differences at the margin in how all these things function. But like, if you have a borrow and lending protocol, like it's mostly the same thing. And if you're already on that chain, like, do you want to move all your assets to go do basically the same thing somewhere else? Probably not. There's like friction associated with that, which everything that we've talked about today. But like, I think branding has a lot to do with it. Like, an Athena has built out like a brand and their own set of users. And then I think this is their attempt to like bring their users into an ecosystem where they own the entire kind of vertical stack to some degree alongside Securitize. Same thing with Base. It's like Coinbase, they have these users. Well, now they want to open up potentially new asset classes to be available to these users and to bring, you know, Coinbase users that are off-chain, on-chain, onto Base and to attract them there. So it's like, almost like the branding and the ecosystem itself is what's competing rather than like the actual technical infrastructure and the incremental differences that they offer.
It's actually very similar to the whole Kraken thing as well. Matt, did you want to get into that as well?
I think we can quick summarize it. Yeah, the transitions very well. So this week, Kraken announced a $1.5 billion acquisition of NinjaTrader. And for those who are unaware, NinjaTrader was a regulated futures exchange for really targeting retail users. They have about 2 million users on the platform today. Kraken has about 15 million users operating in the US, the EU, the UK, and Australia. And this is really an interesting tie-up between the two platforms because Kraken is obviously focused largely or 100% on crypto at the moment, whereas NinjaTrader, because they have access to CME futures, like they have access to Bitcoin futures, but it was largely more of a traditional asset class focused exchange. And so the tie-up really serves to allow Kraken to offer all of the asset classes. And their co-CEO said that in a statement announcing the acquisition. So it's really an interesting, I think, integration between traditional finance and crypto, and will be an interesting space to watch along with these three other stories.
Yeah, I mean, I felt like we had to talk about it because it's one of the biggest like crypto M&A events that's happened, I think.
It's the biggest.
I think it's
okay, the biggest. Yeah. All right. Well, I'm glad we brought it up. I don't have too many thoughts here, but it definitely does seem like there are advantages, from both sides, right? It seems like both companies are gaining some more exposure or at least gaining some expansion there. Jack, do you have any thoughts here?
Yeah, it's just the common theme that we talked about today. It's like these crypto companies see a potential change in the regulatory environment. We see all of these cases being dropped. We see the potential for new legislation to come into play. And I think they see that as an opportunity for like continued convergence of traditional assets and blockchain rails. In this instance, obviously, these are like NinjaTrader offers like derivatives that trade through traditional off-chain environments. But it's like Kraken going after, you know, the derivatives market, geographic expansion between like Ninja now being able to offer ex-US with licenses that Kraken has, as they stated in the release, and Kraken being able to potentially offer derivatives in the US, and like users going to a platform like Kraken and being able to access traditional assets or traditional asset derivatives alongside, you know, digital asset derivatives. And it's that convergence continuing to happen, as was sort of the theme of the prior stories we talked about today as well.
Yeah, I was going to say that word of the day is definitely convergence.
Word of the year.
Word of the year, you're right.
It's my guess so far. I know it's only March, but that's on my bingo card.
I think it's critical to the persistence and existence of crypto as a whole. Like, we need assets that have terminal value, that aren't just circular speculation. That's not to say that everything within crypto is circular speculation, but there is a lot of that. And, you know, hopefully the fundamentals come through for the projects that do have real fundamentals. Like, that's what a lot of crypto venture is underwriting in like early stage tokens, is like an idea that might work or it might not. And hopefully some of those ideas do work that are like crypto native deep in projects and stuff like that. But right now the revenues aren't there for those types of projects to justify the current valuations. And so either fundamentals have to come through for all these more speculative projects, which some of them hopefully they do, or we need to take, you know, the core primitives and the transparency and accessibility that crypto rails bring, and bring assets that have terminal value, that are proven assets, right? Like equities and fixed income in traditional markets, and bring them onto a system that we think is structurally better.
I don't think I could have said it better myself, that's for sure. I mean, and hopefully the convergence is you get the best of both worlds, right? The traditional assets and the crypto rails, and they each make each other better and a better experience for everyone involved. But I think on that note, couldn't end it on a better note myself. I think we can leave it there. Thank you everyone for joining. We'll continue to follow this theme of convergence in the coming weeks, and looking forward to seeing what news we see next week.
Crypto as an asset class is highly volatile, can become illiquid at any time, and is for investors with a high risk tolerance. Crypto may also be more susceptible to market manipulation than securities. Crypto is not insured by the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation or the Securities Investor Protection Corporation. Investors in crypto do not benefit from the same regulatory protections applicable to registered securities. Past performance is no guarantee of future results. This podcast was produced by the Fidelity Center for Applied Technology, also known as FCAT. FCAT does not offer digital assets nor provide clearing or custody of such assets. It is for informational purposes only and is not intended to provide tax, legal, insurance, or investment advice, and should not be construed as an offer to sell, a solicitation of an offer to buy, or a recommendation for any security or other asset by any Fidelity entity or third party. Views expressed are as of the date indicated, based on the information available at the time, and may change based on market or other conditions. Unless otherwise noted, the opinions provided are those of the authors and not necessarily those of Fidelity Investments or its affiliates. Fidelity does not assume any duty to update any of the information. Fidelity and any other third parties mentioned in the podcast are independent entities and are not affiliated. Mentioning them does not suggest a recommendation or endorsement by Fidelity. This information is not intended for distribution to or use by any person or entity in any jurisdiction or country where such distribution would or use would be contrary to local law or regulation. Persons accessing this information are required to inform themselves about and observe such restrictions. Third-party trademarks appearing herein are the property of their respective owners. All others are the property of FMR LLC. Copyright 2025 FMR LLC. All rights reserved. 1040156.